That's questionable.
Good morning, members. I call the Commerce Finance Policy Committee meeting to order on Thursday, March 12th. A quorum is present. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative Buck, may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Do you want me to motion to approve with that addition?
Yes, please
addition?
State your amendment.
Okay. And I think it's the first. They took my page. With the first bill, there was, it was re-referred, but then it never listed that the motion prevailed. I know it did prevail, but it just wasn't listed on there. So that first page at the towards the bottom.
Thank you. So we will just add motion prevailed at the bottom, and we'll have the minutes amended. So all those in favor, do we have to move the amendment at all? Or?
No, just a correction.
Just a correction? Okay. All those in favor of the minutes from March 11, 2026, as corrected, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Thank you very much, Representative Buck. And then first up on the agenda for today is Representative Moeller's House File 4133 is before us. The motion is to move it to the general register. So I will move your bill, House File 4133, before the committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Moeller. I understand there's an author's amendment. Can you please give us the details of the amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the author's amendment does three things. It defines industrial hygienist, as that terminology is used in the bill. It changed distraction devices to diversionary devices. And then the final piece is it allows a homeowner to choose a contractor and an industrial hygienist if one is necessary. It's based on feedback from stakeholders.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Representative Moeller, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So the reason I am handling this bill is having conversations with Colin Hortman. Colin is going to testify today about what their family experienced with respect to remediation for the chemical irritant that were used in the Hortman home. And I will, if I can, Madam Chair, have Colin testify, and then I can follow up with a few more comments about how the bill addresses the issue.
Wonderful. Welcome. We have Colin online. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Colin Hortman. Can you guys all hear me?
We can.
Hello, everyone. I'm Colin Hortman, Mark and Melissa Hortman's son. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm here to describe the process my family went through to get my parents' home cleaned properly after tear gas, chemical irritants, and other diversionary devices were deployed inside. My hope is that by sharing this experience, future victims won't have to go through the same long and confusing fight with insurance and cleanup standards that we did. After my parents were assassinated, law enforcement deployed diversionary devices because they believed the suspect might still be inside. There were multiple canisters used, at least one in every room, and the house was left covered in chemical residue. We quickly learned that cleaning up tear gas and other diversionary grenades is not as simple as wiping things down. The residue that remains in carpets, furniture, walls, and ventilation, and if not removed properly, it can continue to irritate your skin, eyes, lungs, and in some cases leave behind carcinogenic chemicals. The first issue we ran into with insurance is what qualified as proper cleanup. The initial recommendation from the insurer was essentially basic cleaning, soap, water, and general vacuuming. The biohazard cleanup contractor told us that that was not the industry standard for tear gas contamination. They said the proper process required neutralizing chemicals, HEPA filtration, protective gear, and a much more thorough decontamination of the home. The concern was that basic cleaning would not remove the residue that could leave behind chemicals that were unsafe, especially for long-term exposure. At first, I didn't know who to trust. I don't trust contractors, and I don't trust insurance companies either. So I spent weeks trying to understand what the correct process actually was. I contacted other cleanup companies, got additional quotes, and they all described the same type of remediation. Even then, the insurance company said they needed their own analysis before agreeing to the work. That led to another delay, testing. The first round of testing that was done was limited and did not cover all of the possible chemical agents that could have been used. The sampling methods were also questioned by the professionals we were working with. We ended up hiring additional testing through an industrial hygienist who followed the industry standards and used a more complete panel. That testing confirmed what the contractors had said from the very beginning. The house needed full neutralization, filtration, and protective cleanup procedures. Even after that, there was more back and forth. The insurance company still wanted to adjust the scope of work, and the process turned into months of communication, additional reports, and negotiations over what should have been a straightforward remediation. Eventually, after conversations involving lawyers and outside experts, the final cleanup ended up being almost exactly what the contractors had originally recommended. The part that concerns me most is that my family had resources that most people do not have. We had attorneys helping us because of the criminal case. We had connections in the state government. We had the ability to wait months for testing, reports, and negotiations. Even with all of that, the process felt extremely slow, confusing, and difficult to understand. At times, it felt like the system was designed to make you give up and just accept what was ever offered so you could move on. For many families, that is exactly what would happen. If you're still living in the home, you need to sell it, or you need money quickly to deal with everything else that comes after a traumatic event. You may not have the ability to fight over cleanup standards for months. You may accept the first proposal just to get your life back. In our case, if we had done that, the home would not have been properly cleaned, and we could have ended up with a house that wasn't safe to live in or sell in good faith. The delay also had a real emotional cost. This was my childhood home. And after my parents died, there were things that I wanted to do there as part of my grieving and healing process that had to be put on hold for months while we argued over what the insurance company would pay for. That weight came on top of everything else our family was dealing with. The public nature of the case, the ongoing criminal proceedings, and the impact the trauma had on our entire family. Fighting over whether basic cleaning was good enough when the industry standard was clearly more thorough made an already painful situation even harder. I'm here today because I don't want future victims to have to become experts in diversionary devices, chemical gas remediation, insurance law, and environmental testing just to make their home safe again. There should be clear standards for cleanup, clear expectations for insurers, and a process that does not require months of negotiation to reach what professionals already know is the correct solution. Thank you for your time and for your work to make this process fair to the people that have to go through it.
Thank you very much. I know we really appreciate your advocacy and your work for other families that might be facing some of these future tragedies. So we're with you, and thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you for the time.
Next up, we have Nate Berg, president of Seeing Cleaning Incorporated.
He's just here for it to answer questions.
Okay. All right. Yep. Great. Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to testify? Seeing none, we will move to member discussion. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Mueller, please.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I can just sort of walk through the bill at a high level. And I do, again, want to thank Colin for bringing this issue to our attention. And, you know, obviously they figured it out for them, but in true Hortman fashion, want to make this situation better for other victims who are traumatized. And when he referenced the insurance company, he's talking about the city insurance, because right now that there's this dual requirement that homeowners have to work with the city insurance because of an underlying statute that says it's up to the city to reimburse just compensation when there's an innocent third party. And so having to deal with that on top of the other, you know, insurance company and issues you'd have with a home, we really want to streamline this so there's one process and that we can make it clear that it's the homeowner's going to be dealing with their insurance company, and then the insurance company can go back to the city then to get the reimbursement for them. I'll just mention as well that Colin has written testimony that's also in the packet And there's a separate public safety bill moving because part of the issue with the delay is that they didn't know what chemicals were used. And so we've got a separate bill moving that says notice must be given to a homeowner when these are used, and then the homeowner can go back to the law enforcement and find out exactly what chemicals were used, so then they can kind of get going on the cleanup process. I'll say, too, that I've had conversations with, I think, all the stakeholders, and we probably do have a couple more amendments to make on this bill. So just wanted to be clear that there may be some additional amendments going forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Any discussion from members to the bill? Chair O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, I would just like to go last on our side if there are other questions.
Sure. Any other questions from members? Take it away.
Thank you. Representative Chair Mueller, thank you for carrying this. And as we all know, this is an issue that affected the legislature because of the home and the residents and the occupants of that resident and their closeness to the Minnesota legislature being involved in this. The part that just puzzles me, and I don't expect you to answer this as a representative of the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust Fund, which is the insurance company that most, if not all, of the cities in the state of Minnesota get their insurance for public-related activities through. Why would they not step up and pay for this, that we need to put this into the insurance policy in the private sector, and then incur additional costs for the private sector to do a process called subrogation, going after the at-fault party? Just yesterday and throughout this session, we've talked about the costs, rising costs of insurance. When you hire lawyers to go after people for money in recovery, you never get the full amount. Maybe there's a representative today from the League of Minnesota Cities or the Trust Fund who can explain to us why they feel that they're not responsible for stepping forward and taking care of this when one of their insureds deployed these chemicals. Take whatever part of it you want, Representative Mueller.
Representative Jim Mueller.
Yeah, thank you. I won't speak for them. I will say that that there aren't that many of these claims, and so again, I'm not going to make any excuses for them. This isn't something that is extremely common, although obviously it's necessary to prevent this from happening to other victims. But it isn't something that is that common. And I also think a lot of law enforcement didn't even know that the city is responsible for paying when they use those chemicals. So I just think it's not used very often. But again, I'm not making excuses, but that's a point that's worth mentioning.
Madam Chair.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. And as you pointed out, this is an occurrence that happens very infrequently. So it's not like they're stacked up with dozens or tens of thousands of these kinds of claims. You would think this would be something that they would step forward, take care of. And it's not the fault of the law enforcement officials who are deploying these irritants or chemicals. They were trying to save the lives and minimize further loss to take care of us, the general public. And yet the League is not here today. The League is not ready to speak to why they're not doing this. We're going to increase the cost of insurance, albeit for the right reason, but we wouldn't have to have this additional cost had the insurance company for the insured, the city, stepped forward and done what they were supposed to do. And just an observation, two observations. Number one, the folks that we deal with the insurance market in this committee are the private sector insurers. The League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust Fund is not part of any of the groups that you've seen come before you in this committee before. They're a separate entity, completely separate entity from the insurance that's within the realm of our conversations in this committee. I guess my final comment on this would be I see Mr. Cocking is here from the Insurance Federation, and he represents the private insurers. Maybe he'd like to come forward and maybe explain where their position is and why. Maybe he has some answers as to why the League isn't paying and why we're going to try to increase the cost of insurance on everyone, because this group didn't step up and do what they were supposed to do.
Mr. Cocking, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Aaron Cocking, President and CEO of the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Let me start by thanking Representative Mueller, who had reached out to us graciously to ask our input on, obviously, the implications this would have to our members and to policyholders in the state of Minnesota. She's working with us. We've got a few suggestions to get around or to get to the issues on the subrogation issues that you talked about, Representative O'Driscoll, making sure that we're not shifting the burden from the cities who in statute are responsible for this to the policyholders here. I'm not going to speculate on why the league didn't pay this loss. I won't wander into that. It seems outrageous to me. But again, we don't represent them, and I won't speak for them. But I think clarifying that insurers have the right to subrogate back against them as the responsible entity in this is the key feature for us, and making sure that we also have some additional clarification around what we're defining as an innocent third party. Those are the two things for us. But you know, not standing in the way of this moving forward, we want. I mean, as Colin talked about, I mean, when you're in the midst of this, you just want to get your house back to livable. I mean, and so whoever can do that, and clearly, I feel like our members and our industry would probably do a better job of that than the league has done. And so we'll take that on as long as we're able to get that subrogation back from the cities.
Thank you.
In the sense of fairness, I would ask, Madam Chair, if there's anyone who's present today that maybe didn't sign up and would like to take the testifying table and maybe share some comments if there's anyone present today from the league.
I do not see anybody.
Okay. Well, again, it's not the fault of law enforcement. They're using the approved chemicals to be able to try to, again, minimize loss and save lives in this situation. And unfortunately, there is a second... second chapter in this book of how to clean up and pay for this, but clearly this is a League of Minnesota City responsibility, and I'm disappointed that we're having this conversation today and that the Hortman family and others would have to go through something like this, particularly in a very, very emotional and trying time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chermuller, any closing comments?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just say to Mr. Chair that I certainly wasn't implying that law enforcement was at fault here, just that this is the statute was really just unknown by a lot of folks, the underlying statute that required the league to pay. I think people were sort of surprised, probably not the league, but others were surprised by that underlying statute. So again, thank you for the opportunity to present this bill. Thank you so much to Colin Hortman for bringing this to our attention and making it so that future victims don't have to go through the same trauma and delays that the Hortman family experienced. And I appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. I will I move that House File 4133 as amended be referred to the committee on general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. You're on your way. Thank you, Representative Mueller. Next up is Representative Greenman with House File 3419. Welcome to the committee, Representative Greenman. I move to have House File 3419 before the committee. We intend to move this bill to the general register. So, welcome to the committee, Representative Greenman. I also understand that there is a A26 amendment. Can you please share the details of that amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm glad to be back in Commerce. A26. Is a DE that reflects consultation with the reviser stakeholders in the Senate to revise the framework and put the bill in the shape I'd like it.
I will move the DE26. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Representative Greenman, to your bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. House File 3419 is a bill. It is a state solution to a problem that plagues our democracy, the problem of corporate and dark money in our politics. But this isn't a campaign finance bill. It's a corporations bill. It's about what powers the state chooses to grant corporations in the first place. The bill is a reset of our corporate law. It simply removes the power of political spending from the bundle of charter powers that the state of Minnesota chooses to extend to all artificial entities, i.e. corporations. But let's back up for a second and start with the problem that we're trying to solve, the huge problem of dark money and corporate spending in our elections. Over the last two decades, the U.S. has seen an explosion of outside spending in American elections. 2008, It was $144 million nationally. By 2024, the amount was $4.5 billion and rising. That's a 280,000% increase since Citizens United unleashed a torrent of dark money and outside spending that has flooded our elections at every level. This is a national problem, but it's also a Minnesota problem. A report by the University of Minnesota Humphrey School of Public Affairs found that over half the spending in the most competitive races in 2020 were dark money, where voters couldn't determine who were behind the ads or the spending. In 2024, state elections in Minnesota attracted over $25 million in outside spending, and the federal level, as I said, hit $4.5 billion, over half of which was not fully disclosed. Voters couldn't tell where the funding is coming from. I won't belabor the point here. The reality is we have a big problem, and voters across the spectrum want us to do something about it. Poll after poll, and any given day talking to voters in any of our communities shows clearly there's a concern about money in our politics. The concern is overwhelming, and it cuts across party lines. Voters are concerned that wealthy donors' influence is growing. In a January 2026 poll, 68% of Americans said wealthy donors have more influence than they did a decade ago. 76% agree that large donors make it harder for ordinary Americans to have their voices heard, including supermajorities of Republicans, 76%, Democrats, 86%, and Independents, 81%. A whopping 81% of Americans are concerned with the influence of money in our politics, and 77% say it poses a threat to elections. There is very little in our politics where 80% of Americans agree on something, but then again, this is about their power. This is about the power of voters to make decisions in our elections. The good news is that states have power to take action to eliminate the corporate dark money from our politics. Now, I know we're going to hear the chamber, the corporate spending lobby, say there's nothing we can do. Americans want us to do something, but there's nothing we can do. Our hands are tied. Lawmakers and the public are helpless because Citizens United said any and all solutions at all to block corporate money are void. They'll lobby, they'll sue, and then they'll threaten to defeat you if you don't listen. And we understand why they want us to believe that. The chamber and the big business lobby rely on this flood of dark money to get their way and exercise power in these halls and halls of government across the country. And the thing is, they're wrong. States are not powerless. And since the founding, states have had the power to decide and prescribe if any and which, if we decide, powers we will grant corporations to exercise. See, Citizens United is about whether Congress and the states could regulate powers that states have granted corporations. But this policy isn't about regulating the rights of corporations. It's about the powers that the state chooses to grant corporations in the first place. And the good news is that the Constitution leaves it up to us, the states, to determine what powers corporations have, if at all. See, natural people, human beings, as most folks call them, are born and empowered with inalienable rights. Corporations aren't born. They are built, and they exist only as a function of law. This is a bedrock principle of American law. As Justice Scalia, who I don't quote very often, described in Citizens United in his concurring opinion, to be sure, in 1791, as now, corporations could only pursue the objectives set forth in their charter. That charter is prescribed by state law. So, for over two centuries, the power to define the forms, the powers, and the limits, and the privileges of corporations belong to the states. And that's us. That's what brings us here to this bill. Because we, the states, have the power to decide, and we need to use that. It's clear voters don't want corporations flooding our elections with their cash, and political spending isn't a power we have to grant corporations. That's what this bill does. It takes the power and the privileges away from all artificial entities, just as it relates to political spending. It does this by changing corporation law to remove the power of artificial persons to exercise political spending power. It states as a matter of law that political spending powers are not necessary or convenient for any artificial person to carry out their lawful business activity. It requires that all political spending in Minnesota is done through the political committee set up under Minnesota law, where contributions are disclosed and rules apply. And a fun fact for anybody that's been following campaign finance law, this just was the law in 2009. We actually didn't allow corporations to spend in independent expenditures until 2010. To be clear, this does not regulate or restrict any rights of natural persons, of humans, acting in their individual capacity. It does not impact any other powers that Minnesotans grant to corporations to carry out their lawful purposes. It simply uses our power as the state to refuse to grant corporations political spending power and makes that power beyond their charter. So whether you love Citizens United or join 80% of Americans who think it's just wrong, doesn't matter here. It's very clear that states have the power to determine what powers it grants corporations. And the question is, will we use it on behalf of our voters or the corporations that want to continue to pour money in our politics? With that, Madam Chair, I believe there are some testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. First on the list is David Fisher, followed then by Nathaniel Olson. If you could just make your way up to the rostrum and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Cahill and Co-Chair Driscoll and members. This is a tough act to follow. My name is David Fisher. I'm here representing an organization called Clean Elections Minnesota. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working for an inclusive and healthy democracy in Minnesota. I'm also a career corporate lawyer, and I teach business law at the University of Minnesota Law School. So I wore my law school tie today. And I'm also a former Minnesota State Commissioner and a member of the Metropolitan Council, so I've been around a bit. And I'm also a chief election judge in Hennepin County. I'm here for Clean Elections Minnesota in support of House File 3419. With these comments, many of which have been touched on by Representative Greenman, I'm going to repeat something.
Please.
The foundation of our democracy, our chosen system of governance, is that each of us have value, each of us has a say, each of us, if we are truly to be free, has a right to be heard, and each of us has the right, indeed the obligation, to vote and to have that vote counted. Citizens United held that independent expenditures do not corrupt and could not even create the appearance of corruption, which later courts have held makes restrictions on contributions unconstitutional. With that, the super PAC was born and dark money groups took off. As Representative Greenman has indicated, this has led to what I call a tsunami of money into our election politics in Minnesota and across the nation. I won't repeat all the statistics here, but as Representative Greenman says, in 2008, before Citizens United, the spending on federal elections was $144 million by corporate interests. By 2012, the first election after Citizens United, that outside spending surged to $1 billion with a B. In 2020, it reached $3.23 billion, and in 2024, this last election, $4.5 billion. And super PACs, in 2010, they spent $62.6 million, and by 2012, they spent $622.7 million, a tenfold increase, and again, close to $4.5 billion with a B by 2024. In 2012, the top 1% of super PAC donors provided 77% of all funds. By 2024, that rose from 77% to 97%. Individuals like me who contribute $10 or $50 or even $500 to a political campaign are simply overwhelmed, drowned out by this money tsunami, and our voices not heard. So many believe that we can stop this big money by having the Supreme Court overturn Citizens United. Well, we're going to wait a long time for that. Or to create a constitutional amendment that would change the results of Citizens United, which would be a monumental task at the very best. So as Representative Greenman has presented in 3419, there's another way, and we think it will work, and it's a matter of corporate law. It touches on elections, but it's a matter of corporate law. Corporations are artificial juridical persons with power to perform commercial activities like entering into a contract or owning property. But they are creatures of state law and have only the powers to operate that a state legislature provides. In other words, corporations are creatures of state law. And for more than two centuries, as acknowledged in literally thousands of court decisions, the power to define corporate form, limits, privileges, and powers belong only to the states and our state legislatures. Corporations are given the image of having personhood because of the broad language used in statutes like Minnesota's that say basically that corporations have the power to do whatever they want to do or whatever they need to do to conduct business. Courts have used that to interpret it to extend to the right to give money, unlimited amounts of money, in elections as a matter of free speech. So this is a matter of the legislature's laws and the court's interpretations of those laws. It's up to the states to decide whether they and the state legislature to decide whether they want to change that dynamic. So this is no longer about corporate rights, as the Supreme Court determined in Citizens United. This is about corporate powers granted by the state about what a corporation can or cannot do. When a state exercises its authority to define corporations as an entity without the power to spend in politics, it will no longer be relevant whether corporations have a right to spend in politics, because without the power to do so, the right to do so has no meaning. So the solution is this: clarify legislative intent in state statute that enumerates the powers a corporation has to conduct business, such that those powers are not deemed or interpreted as granting a power that isn't there, that power being use of independent resources to influence elections in our state. House File 3419 addresses this solution. It's an effort to return our voters a true say in our elections without being overwhelmed and drowned out by the massive amount of corporate dark money we've seen in recent elections. Clean Elections Minnesota urges the committee to take action in favor of House File 3419. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I might take a little bit of a chair's privilege and ask a question. What would happen if an AI incorporated itself? Would it be a person? Mr. Fisher?
Oh, me? an AI, if it's incorporated, it is an entity incorporated under the laws of the state of Minnesota, this law would affect that. But it could be interpreted as being a person. You could give this AI a name and have an avatar. Is that what
avatar, yeah.
Avatar? I don't know much about this. Create an avatar, you can say, yeah, this person has the powers of a natural person because of the broad language used in our state statutes across this country and in Minnesota that grant basically unlimited powers as natural persons to corporations, which are artificial beings.
So the sci-fi book that I read could happen. All right. Sorry. Next up on the agenda, Nathaniel Olson, followed by Brian Cook. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I am Nathaniel M. Olson, the disability advocate for the state of Minnesota, and House File Bill 3419 just got introduced in 2026. Interesting. But I think it's interesting that we're going to have corporate money, or as people will call it, is dark money. I want to make something very, very clear. This bill is probably going to be very, very hard to get passed in the House, but easy to get passed in the Senate, and probably will not be signed off by Governor Walz, because I would be surprised if Governor Walz would sign off on this bill. Number one, I want to make a point to you members here. Why wasn't this bill introduced in 2024? Why are we waiting about 2.5 years for this bill to get introduced? The only thing that I can think is because who we have as President of the United States is why this bill is introduced right now. So I'm asking the members, if this bill moves forward, and if the Minnesota Supreme Court overturns the corporation bill, do you believe that Governor Walz is going to sign off on this bill? Because 99%, I do not believe he's going to sign off on this bill at all. I think this bill is going to get vetoed. That's what I think is happening. This bill, and as Representative Greenman said, stuff was happening in 2009. Why wasn't a bill introduced in 2009? It's very interesting to me that we're having bills being introduced in 2026 that if we had a problem with this dark money, we had a problem with corporations giving money to certain election officials and stuff, why on earth are we having this bill introduced now? It should have been introduced in 2009. So I want you guys to think very carefully on this. If this bill gets passed and gets into the House, it's going to be a tie and will not pass because it is 67-67. And do I believe that the Minnesota Supreme Court is going to overturn this? No. I do not believe so. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Brian Cook. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thanks, Chair Cagle. Members of the Commerce Committee, my name is Brian Cook. I'm the Director of Taxes, Fiscal Policy, and Elections for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, representing over 6,300 member companies who employ over 500,000 Minnesotans. Appreciate the opportunity for us to share our opposition to House File 3419 as amended by the A26-0121 amendment. While we are approaching this from a business lens, it's important to note that the bill would apply to entities of all kinds, whether they are businesses or nonprofit organizations. So the concept behind this bill originates from a September report by the Center for American Progress. While the bill states that this is a constitutional approach to removing the recognized free speech rights of entities operating in Minnesota, there are numerous constitutional issues, many raised in that report itself, such as the doctrine of unconstitutional conditions. This doctrine holds that the government may not require persons to give up their constitutionally protected rights, in this case their First Amendment rights to free speech, in order to receive a public benefit, in this case the ability to exist, operate, and do business in Minnesota. The bill is also expansive in that in addition to seeking to thwart election activity, it also seeks to block businesses from participating in ballot issue activity, which has been protected speech since the 1978 First National Bank of Boston versus Bilotti decision. Ballot issues, whether city charter amendments or state constitutional amendments, can have direct and profound impacts on businesses. They have a right to share those impacts, and voters have a right to hear them. Instead of Minnesota being the first state in the country to pursue this approach, at best constitutionally dubious bill, we recommend it undergo judicial scrutiny elsewhere first. As a reminder, on May 15, 2023, Governor Walz signed House File 3 into law. That bill contained provisions that amended Minnesota Statutes 211B.15 to bar so-called foreign influence corporations from exercising their constitutional rights to participate in political speech. This proposal raised serious constitutional questions throughout the legislative process. As a result of that law's enactment and on behalf of our members' rights, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce filed a lawsuit in federal court challenging the constitutionality of that law on June 30th, 2023. Defendants in that suit were John Choi in his capacity as the Ramsey County Attorney and the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. On December 20th, 2023, Judge Tostrud granted us a preliminary injunction preventing the law from taking effect as scheduled on January 1st, 2024. Then, on February 7, 2025, Judge Tostrud ruled in favor of our motion on summary judgment, permanently blocking enforcement of that law. Because the chamber prevailed in this federal civil rights case, we were entitled to recover attorney's fees and costs from the defendants, which necessitated a $760,000 appropriation to the campaign finance board in last year's state government finance bill. It's important to note that the same originators of the so-called foreign influence corporation law, the Center for American Progress, are the originators of this new approach around corporate charters. Their recommendations have already cost Minnesota taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars. We urge the committee to reject this new attempt at prohibiting free speech and oppose House File 3419. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other testifiers wishing to come up to the rostrum, please, and state your name for the record? Proceed with your testimony.
Hello. Andrew Irvin from White Bear Lake, Madam Chair. I'm here as a citizen who is an active volunteer in both political campaigns and legislative issues. I'm a citizen lobbyist on a variety of issues, and I've managed campaigns for a former state House member and a current suburban mayor. In this volunteer work, I am strongly encouraged by the dedication of many volunteers carrying out door knocking, phone calling, writing postcards and letters to the editor, hosting house parties, and putting up lawn signs. Each of these activities are important means of political speech. And together, our voices are strong when we are out carrying out those activities. However, I am deeply concerned that the voices of corporations with huge amounts of, with unlimited amounts of money, can overwhelm our speech. We all know what forms of mega speech corporations take: endless mailings and tidal waves of TV, radio, and online ads. There are those who will argue that corporations are simply sharing their voice through unlimited investments in the marketplace of political speech. They will argue that corporations speak for their shareholders. But this is inherently undemocratic. It is effectively shouting down those of us working door to door, making phone calls, and hosting neighborhood house parties. To those who would argue that corporations should be able to invest unlimited and hidden money in political speech, I ask how they would ensure that the rest of us have equal access to this marketplace of political speech. And I believe that House File 3419 begins to answer that question. I am strongly encouraged by this bill's strong wording defining political speech as belonging to individuals and not corporations. While this legislation does not eliminate large sums of money in state-level elections, it does require that it be managed through political funds and committees that are regulated by the state, with full disclosure of amounts and sources. This is a major step forward in strengthening free and fair elections in our state. And thank you for this opportunity to provide.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We also have a testifier online. Tom Moore, if you could identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify in strong support of HF 3419 as amended. My name is Tom Moore. I'm a senior fellow for democracy policy at the Center for American Progress. Before joining CAP, I served as senior counsel and chief of staff to former Federal Election Commission Chair Ellen L. Weintraub. And today I come to you with good news. For 16 years, we've all been told that the only way to undo Citizens United is through a federal constitutional amendment or a new Supreme Court. But there is another way. It is brand new, it is shockingly simple, and it's based on 200 years of foundational corporation law, and it's before you today in HF 3419. All Minnesota has to do to get corporations out of its politics is decide to no longer grant corporations the power to spend in its politics. That is it. That is the core distinction, corporate rights versus corporate powers. The Supreme Court has been asked over and over whether corporations have a right to spend in politics. What it has never been asked and is never spoken on is whether corporations must have the power to spend in politics in the first place. As Justice Scalia wrote in Citizens United in his concurrence, to be sure, in 1791 as now, corporations could only pursue the objectives set forth in their charters. If Minnesota defines its artificial entities as entities without political spending powers, then political spending is ultra vires, beyond the power granted, and there's nothing left for Citizens United to protect. Here's the clearest way I know how to explain it. You and I do not have the power to fly. I mean, flap your arms and fly. Our creator did not give us that power. Birds, bats, pterodactyls, yes. Humans, no. Now, if the Supreme Court announced tomorrow that humans have a constitutional right to fly, none of us would head to the roof of the Minnesota Capitol building to test that. No court can change the underlying reality that humans simply don't have the power to fly. Works the same for corporations. Minnesota created its corporations. Minnesota defines what they are. If Minnesota defines its corporations as entities that do not have the power to spend in Minnesota's politics, according to 200 years of unbroken Supreme Court precedent, no court can change that underlying reality. HF 3419, as amended, is designed to survive litigation. It does its substantive work in its definitions, where court cannot easily strike words. It appropriately includes a facilities-based press carve-out for bona fide news and commentary, an exception for political committees so they can do the job they were designed to do. Courts hold erasers, not pens. They cannot write corporate powers into existence. Only this legislature can do that. When I was working on this, the first code name for this project was Operation Ruby Slippers. As Glinda, the good witch of the North, told Dorothy, you've always had the power, my dear. You just had to learn it for yourself. The power to keep corporate and dark money out of Minnesota politics has been sitting in Minnesota law for a very long time. You have always had the power. HF 3419 may well be how many of you are now learning that you have it. Getting this bill passed is not going to be as simple as tapping your ruby slippers together three times. It's going to take some effort and political will, but it's what the people of Minnesota want and deserve. Many elected leaders, including many of you in your hearing room, I'm sure, have decried Citizens United over the years. We've all talked the talk. HF 3419 is our opportunity to walk the walk. I've fielded thousands of questions on this approach over the past year, and I welcome all of yours. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Is there any other testifiers? Please come up to the restroom, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. My name is Jeff Clark. I'm a resident of St. Paul. And I've had a long-term interest both intellectually and in working with organizations that are seeking a constitutional amendment to limit the power of big money and corporate power in politics and government. This bill, I'm testifying today because of this particular bill, HF 3419, is a very elegant and simple solution to curb some of the negative effects of big money in politics. What it essentially does, in my view, and has been echoed in other testimony here, it's a relatively recent way to deal with sidestepping Citizens United decision in 2010 by going back to the source and being able to deal with corporate powers on the state level. HF 3419 denies corporate entities the power of campaign and ballot issue spending on behalf of corporate interests, basing this action on the state's authority to charter or incorporate such artificial persons as creations of the state. This incorporating process precedes their existence and activity as an artificial person, per the Supreme Court, and is controlled by the states, much as the states are granted the constitutional authority to administer their own elections. Any state should in practice be able to define a corporation created by itself as having no power to spend money in the election process. Thus, a violation of free speech never comes into question. 3419 simply involves a strategy which other states are also pursuing right now, Montana, I think, first among them. This is a recent development to deal with the chartering process as a way to combat money in politics. 3419 cannot solve our big money in politics problem alone. It cannot restrict PACs, committees, funds, or any variant of these, which are solely created and administered for electioneering purposes. It does, however, prevent corporate business entities from engaging in the same activity directly, which should and could have a substantial impact on election and ballot issues. 3419 is an admirable first step in regaining control of elections that better represent the constituents who vote in them and must live with their consequences. I hope it will be easier to pass than the longer-term solution, a federal constitutional amendment to curb money and corporate power. That legal instrument should complement this legislation, but can be more comprehensive in scope and, though harder to achieve, more durable if it is. The best formulation of such an amendment is HF 2688, which petitions Congress to draft such an amendment. In closing, I thank you for your time and urge you to support HF 3419.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any other testifiers? Going once, going twice, all right. With that, we will move to member discussion. I just wanted to say that the Ruby Slippers thing was actually, like, when I thought about that, that's such a Minnesota thing, and especially since they were stolen, and then we just recently recovered them. So I feel like that's a perfect metaphor for this bill, is that, you know, our voices have been stolen from us and overwhelmed by corporate power and money. And so now we're getting those Ruby Slippers back. So Representative Hewitt, I saw your hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's a very interesting topic that we do have over and over again. So, question for Representative Greenman. Do we allow outstate donations from, like, my nephew that lives in Hudson? He's the individual, he donates to my campaign. Is that allowed?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hewitt, assuming he's not the AI bot that that Chair Cagle referenced, but is a natural person's, the answer is yes.
So when I'm sorry, Madam Chair. So when I started a few corporations, I sat down with a lawyer naturally, and they said, these are living, breathing things. They will devour anything to survive. The one thing they're not is citizens. So I'm having some conflict with my nephew, who is not a citizen of Minnesota that can give me money, but the corporation that is not a citizen, is that where we're, help me out with that, what's the fine line there, please, Madam Chair.
Rep. Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your nephew and all human beings are endowed by the creator, by the world, with inalienable rights, and that's also what the Constitution recognizes. Corporations only exist because we pass laws that give them power. And for the first 150 years of the history of this country, the legislature actually chartered individual powers for individual corporations. So we would do that work in committees like this for individual corporations. And the difference is that in the last 50 years, we added these big general provision clause, which the court interpreted to be like humans, to be like natural persons, but doesn't have to be. We have that power. And I think the difference is that I think we all agree, one person, one vote. I hope we all agree that our democracy, when you live in a people-powered democracy, the decisions that both decide the consequences of elections, but also what we do in this body, should be those people in our districts and not those corporations, as you eloquently said, who've devoured everything to stay alive, including our elections and our democracy. And so that's the difference, I think.
Well, last closing
Representative
mark.
Hewitt.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman. You made that argument quite well. Of course, you're a lawyer. But anyways, I think that unlike your testifier that came up here, I have optimism that this is problematic for both sides of the aisle. I've talked to my colleagues across the aisle about this subject, and I don't I'm more optimistic that this is something that we can look at and go to together. And I, again, I don't know why the governor wouldn't look at this if we all come to an agreement on it, but I'm Madam Chair, I'm really optimistic about this. I think we have to do more exploring here, but I think this could help all of us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Reimer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman, my question is about Subdivision 4, the political exception. And it states that, your last testifier kind of highlighted it. A political fund or committee that is registered under Minnesota or federal law, that is an entity created for the purpose of engaging in election activity and ballot issue activity. A political fund or committee may be granted power to engage in election and ballot activities provided the political fund or committee exists solely for the purpose and claims no entity benefits other than limited liability. Nothing in law grants an entity that is not a political fund or committee the power to engage in election activity or ballot activity. So it seems to me that the way it's structured in Minnesota, there are a lot of entities that are structured as maybe they have a 501c4 organization and a 501c3. I think as the bill reads, that would effectively ban all spending from those organizations that have both and. But my question is, what would stop me from just, if I'm a rich donor, most of these donations do come from individuals. I don't think, we have more than maybe 15% of all spending in Minnesota or donations from Minnesota are corporations directly. What would stop me from, say, if I have Alliance for a Better Minnesota that's a 501c4 that's attached to a national group of national 501c3, what would stop me from just spinning up a different entity that is only the 501c4 or only focused on elections? That's my question.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about our campaign finance law and sort of the structure as it exists. So a couple of things. One, 501c3 can't spend money in our elections. It's against their tax status. And what we're talking about is, and if you look at the definition of political spending, it's spending to support or oppose a candidate or a ballot initiative. So that's for starters. But we do have this big problem of 501c4s. Before 2010 in Minnesota, we had political committees, which individuals can give to, natural persons, and there are limits on that. That's what the law would be like if we passed this. So there are limits on what you can give, and you all know this, your candidates, there are political spending limits in our regulated entities. What we're talking about is the 501c4s, is the super PACs, is the independent spending that before 2010 was banned in Minnesota that could come from a wealthy individual. It could come from a corporate general fund. It could come from a union general fund. It could come from anywhere, right? And so what this does is limits it and says that the political spending in Minnesota after this, we're not going to allow any corporation. We had a conversation about this bill just coming now. For folks who know me, and I've been in the legislature, I've been working on this since I got here, and people have been working on it since we got here. And I'll leave my comments when someone asks me about the chamber. But the point here is that this issue is a state law and a federal law created issue. And so if we want to be in a place where we say the only way you can spend money is regulated and disclosed, and it should be natural people driving it, and it shouldn't be someone who has $1 million can give $1 million, right? But it is in the regulated space. This is a way to do this. It does not stop all political spending. It just stops that outside spending that is being spent and that independent spending that is being spent, and it stops general fund contributions. And I will say, I have gotten calls on this from both, from corporations, from unions, from all of the folks who want to spend and have gotten used to a political system that is new. Like, it wasn't like this in Minnesota before 2010. But I think that our obligation is not to any of them. It is to the voters who I think I have talked to some of you privately. Voters believe the system is rigged against them. They believe that corporations, that special interests have more power here than they do. And I think that this is one thing we can do to ensure that the political spending that happens is done through a regulated system, it's natural persons, and everything else we take out of the equation.
Representative Reimer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure that that answered my question really. To have a standalone organization that is only devoted to election activity you could hypothetically spin up in a wink, wink, nod, nod way something that is devoted to the same issues that a PAC is devoted to right now. So if the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce that you mentioned, if somebody closely affiliated with that organization spun up a 501c4 organization that was only devoted to ballot and election initiatives, I think this just creates one more level of bureaucracy and just lack of clarity. Because when I look at the top 10 spenders in the Minnesota 2022 election, eight of the top 10 were DFL affiliated groups, and oftentimes when we have people who are on our side, right, they're industry groups. They're advocating for an issue because they feel like an industry is attacked. On the other side, I think this would be much easier for, say, Alliance for Better Minnesota to navigate this process because they spend much more money than industry advocates do. So if you could just specifically address how this wouldn't create just another level of, I'm going to create a new entity that's not affiliated with the Minnesota business community, and everyone will know to give to that entity. I don't know if this solves that problem.
Representative Greenman, and we also, I will note that Tom Moore is still on and can help if need be.
Yeah, this is a Minnesota campaign finance law question, and I'd love to have you on elections to talk about 10A and 211 B, but what you are fundamental. If you are spending more money in politics right now, not through our current regulated system, this will have a bigger impact on you. The reason that what political funds do, and we all, there's campaign funds, right? We all have one. And then there's PACs, which are under 10A, which is what is here. And usually they have, their corporate structure power is just limited liability. Right? They don't exercise all of these other powers that corporations have. And so what this does is if what you're saying is, could you circumvent this by creating a PAC under 10A or a political committee under 10A? The answer is no, because there are very specific regulations about the money that you can take. Your disclosure, and you may not have run a PAC before, but you have run a campaign, and you file reports, and you have limits, and you have to know where the money is coming from. And that's what our campaign finance structure is. That's what 10A is about. And so what this does is eliminate all the stuff you're talking about, which is outside of that, which has sprung up, and again, has sprung up in the last 15 years, and is the consequence and the result of what we're talking about, but that would all go away. Now, what you raised is, and I think this is maybe the point that Representative Hewitt was raising, which is, yeah, if you're in a, don't hate the player, hate the game, and you're in the game, and you're raising a lot of money right now, you're not gonna like this. And there are industry folks, there are folks on the left and the right and everything. But our job is not to ask the question of are they being heard more by their general funds? Our job and our question is our voters, who can continue to give their $50 and have it matched, are their voices being heard? And so that's what that's what this exclusion does. It forces all the money back into the regulated system, which has rules, it doesn't force it back. It just allows that. And then it says all the other kinds of corporations, and it includes all of them, business corporations, the chamber said, nonprofit corporations, public interest corporations, corporation entities, artificial entities we've never heard of. We drafted it so that in the future it would be covered. It says they don't have the power as part of their necessary and convenient powers to do their business or their nonprofit mission, they don't have the power to spend in our elections. That's what the provision does.
Rep. Reimer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more quick follow-up on this. So if a corporation can't give, but a rich CEO of a corporation decides that he wants to cut an independent expenditure group a check for, say, $22 million, does this bill do anything to address maybe what he might have corporate interest in his donation because he's the CEO of a company, but does this cap independent expenditure spending from very rich individuals in Minnesota?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You are now asking me a 10A and a 211B question that I can get back to you on. There are, when you look at our independent, again, we have a structure on independent expenditures that are regulated, and there are rules around that. I'll have to get back to you. What it does not allow you to do is, though, say, and we do need a constitutional amendment to deal with the fact that a candidate, that the Supreme Court has said an individual candidate can spend as much as they want in their own election. That is something that this bill does not deal with because that is a natural person's question. The Supreme Court still upholds spending limits and some of our contribution limits. And so what you're asking is about the current structure at the state level of our independent expenditure law, which does have regulations around it. I just, off the top of my head, because I was coming to Commerce, so I'm happy to follow up with you on specifically, and we're gonna have a conversation with the Campaign Finance Board Chair too.
That's good. May I?
Mr. Moore?
Thank you. So the political committees are the structures that are set up to take, to spend this kind of money in the system. If you are a wealthy individual and you wanna spend $22 million, this doesn't stop you from doing that. There is another reform that Professor Larry Lessig is running through the First Circuit, a court case that would actually handle that. What this will do, though, and this is what we've seen more often than not during the Citizens United era, is that person with the $22 million doesn't want to disclose their name. And so they give it to a 501c4 dark money group, and that group gives it to a super PAC, which does disclose the donor's name, but the donor's, in that case, is only the name of the dark money group, so there's no real disclosure. So what... If you want to spend all that money, yes, this will not stop you from doing it, but it will stop you from laundering it through a dark money group and keeping your name off of it. And if there's an incredibly wealthy individual who is spending a huge pile of money to affect an issue or an election and their name is attached to that spending, that is a useful thing for the voters of your state to know. And that's not something they know right now.
Thank you. All right. Representative Falconer.
Thank you, Chair. This is a fascinating bill, and thank you so much, Representative Greenman, for bringing it up. I used to do some voluntary work in the space on a different angle of this, of curtailing money in politics, and so I really appreciate the bill. I just go back to, there's a Princeton study looking at about three decades of polling of about 1,800 surveys where figuring out where the American public was on an issue, but then also analyzing where the money was behind it from lobbying, campaigns, expense, TV ads, et cetera. The vast majority of federal legislation passed through the study was demonstrated that follow the money, like that tried and true phrase, follow the money, that's how legislation is gonna get passed. That along with just in 2024, 300 billionaires and their families contributed $3 billion. And the elections, the top 100 of those contributed 2.6 of that. Elon Musk with $300 million, down to Mike Bloomberg with $64 million. The inordinate expense is astonishing. But as Mr. Moore just said, like, this bill doesn't stop individuals from doing what they want to do. It just makes it so we know what they're doing and how they're doing it. And I think it just comes down to the fact that right now corporations can donate. Getting their money to super PACs, hiding where the money came from, who specifically donated it, which is just a basic assault on our democracy, and disallowing voters to know who's actually behind TV ads. It could even be a foreign entity. At a certain point, we lose track of where the money's coming from. The last election, estimates of $1.9 billion in electoral spending from corporations, but that's likely undercounted from this article. just because we don't know exactly where it's coming. So it's probably much more. And so I just think Americans and Minnesotans, like you said, 80% want this fixed. They clearly want this. They support this bill. So I just thank you, Representative Greenman, for bringing this up. It's a very creative, novel approach. I'm pretty excited about it. I think that Minnesota could really lead the way in fighting back against this. And I hope this committee and legislative body can support this relatively easy solution on this current assault on our democracy. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman, I have a series of questions and some comments. But I'm going to first ask, in your opinion, how this bill would affect, say, labor unions or other politically active nonprofits that spend on elections.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you. It would affect them all the same. So if you are a union or if you're a corporation or whatever kind of entity you are, and if you look the way that it's drafted, it's drafted. If you look at the definition of artificial persons, which I was surprised to find we did not have already in our corporate statutes, an entity whose existence, legal status, or limited liability is conferred by Minnesota law, it's governed by all of those chapters, but it's not limited to that because we wanted to make sure that any additional new corporate structures would be covered as well.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think there's some differences in opinion as to whether or not it treats everybody fairly, Representative Reed. So I think that unfortunately, while this committee, Madam Chair, generally works on legislation that has bipartisan support, this is an example of something that has zero. There's not a single Republican on the House or Senate side, as this bill has been introduced, that has support from Republicans. And I wish that we could work on more issues, specifically today. I wish this was something that could garner that kind of support. And as we heard in testimony earlier, Madam Chair, we have, unfortunately, a track record of the DFL of Minnesota introducing and passing legislation that winds up being challenged on its constitutional merits and costing the taxpayers, at least in the example that was mentioned earlier in testimony, $750,000. Apparently, the lawyers made a mistake. The folks that had advised legislators on one side of the aisle that this was a good idea, let's go ahead and pass a bill, got it wrong. And I think that this is an example of another bill that gets it wrong. If we're talking about a populist issue, something that has broad bipartisan support, we could talk about a lot of other things, like, for example, voter ID, which also polls at about 80% and also very high amongst Democrats here in Minnesota. When we're using words like I've heard in testimony supporting this bill, like dark money and launder, and I could go on down the list, quite honestly, I would take that as precious. Those words are words that are designed to conjure an image of something that's horrible and evil. I get it. And maybe it accomplishes a goal, but it doesn't get at the actual impact of legislation like this, which limits speech, which I think is important to all of us in terms of a talking point. But when it comes to actual legislation, I think today it's demonstrated that not productive. So I would say that this is something that very likely, as has previously occurred, would wind up challenged in court and struck down. and costs Minnesota taxpayers more money. I hope that this bill is going nowhere today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a lot to respond to there, including it'd be interesting if you pointed to where the differences of opinion about how it affects people differently. It's easy to say, but there's language in front of you, and if you need to borrow this corporate statute book, you can. I'm also not sure how voter ID is going to stop billionaires from flooding our money, our elections with money. So that it is a different conversation, but it is not actually about how do we keep billionaires. It's not their individual vote that is the problem. It is their billions of dollars that is drowning out the millions of votes of Americans. And the last thing I'll say is, like, I think it's unfortunate. It would be great to see some of your ideas, because this is not a partisan issue once you leave the halls of this building. And I cited those polls, and I know you're hearing about it. I've talked to some of your colleagues about it over and over again. And so it's unfortunate that it will not impugn motives, but I just don't understand. I haven't seen an idea, and I would work on any idea, and I have, that actually deals with the issue of money and politics that 80% of our voters across the board want us to deal with. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I'll say, and I wanted to address this about, you know, the chamber, is I think it's unfortunate that they are using their power every time we pass bills that was the most popular piece of the package we passed, the Democracy for the People Act. And the chamber, who is trying to protect their own power and the power of the business lobby, went and sued the state of Minnesota in order to allow foreign influence corporations to continue spending in our elections. And the courts made a decision, but that does not mean that we don't have a say about it or shouldn't have an opinion about it. And so, yeah, we should go back and try another way. And this is a different way. And this is not about Citizens United. This is about corporate law. And it is rooted deeply in 250 years of the way we have always chartered corporations. And I didn't hear an argument about our corporate charter law, which is what the bill is about and what our power is about. And so I would really welcome this to be a bipartisan conversation focused on how we get dark money out of our elections. But if literally every bill we bring, the other side of the aisle, not Republicans in districts, but the other side of the aisle, won't do it with us, then I think we're not going to give up. We're not going to give up for the people of Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that last point, Representative Greenman, no, we won't give up, because this limits speech. And we won't support an effort to take that speech and that opportunity for Minnesotans to address an issue away from them. We will not give up. We will defend them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. First question, just clarification. What is the motion before us?
It is to move it to the General Register.
I think it is rare that the people of Minnesota will get as clear a view on who is standing for their voice versus the voices of big business, big corporations, and dark money. So I do want to ask for a roll call vote, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We will take the roll call.
Thank you. This issue is easy to obscure, and that's what big business and corporations and the chamber today is trying to do, talk about laws, talk about different court cases, and try to dispute what is before us. What is before us, and the reason this is in the Commerce Committee, is there's a basic question that the people of Minnesota get to decide, and that is, what is a business? What's its function? What does it do in our economy, in our society, and in this case, in our politics? And at a basic question, I think the people of Minnesota as a whole would say very clearly that businesses, while they are buying and selling, while they are influencing the private sector, they cannot buy and sell politicians. We at this table are voices, each of us, of somewhere between 40 and 50,000 Minnesotans. And collectively, we should be making choices based on what we hear from them, what we have told them, what we have promised to do, not if a business is giving us money or not. This is a fundamental question. And I think the vast majority of Minnesotans would agree. Should a company that is building a data center, as they're buying the concrete for the foundation and they're buying the software from out of state or overseas that would be used here in Minnesota, are they also able to buy a politician that would look the other way while utility rates rise for the people who live in that small town where that data center is going in? Should a company that finds out that the pesticide, its best-selling pesticide, is harmful to the children who live in the rural communities where that pesticide is used, be able to give money to a politician to not regulate that pesticide? Should a big retailer making trillions in profit and paying minimum wage be able to buy a politician that is going to continually say, we can't raise minimum wage, can't give people more money? That would ruin business. Should a company that sells and makes money on assault rifle sales be able to buy politicians that say, we can't ban assault rifles? We just heard a presentation yesterday. Should insurance companies be able to buy politicians that continually say, we need more government subsidies, while that same insurance company is giving 30% raises to their CEOs? No, 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 Minnesota voters would say. And so we have this bill in front of us that says we know what to do. That company, by definition of what it is, because we decide, the people of Minnesota and the representatives of those people decide what makes a corporation and what doesn't make a corporation. We can say that is not what a corporation does. And I do think we should be unified as elected officials and say that. I hope we will today in this committee. I hope we will in passing this bill and signing it into law. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, what is the motion that's in front of us that was asked for a roll call?
General Register.
So, members, what we have is a motion in front of us on this bill. A representative has thrown out the roll call like it's a dagger. Representative Greenman, to your bill, thank you for your testimony. Your passion's there. I know you're on the issues, and you use the word bipartisan, reaching across the aisle many, many times. I've talked to you. I've been to your office. I've been in the back of the retiring room. And I do believe while there's partisan rhetoric around this place, heck, I was at the Guthrie last night for a great play. I've seen theater. Okay? But getting us to those bipartisan conversations and those solutions in a tight environment is not going to be accomplished by throwing out these ultimatums of let's do a roll call on this. The motion is a motion. We're voting on motions. We vote them all the time. Look across this room. No, there isn't a person in this room that's going to be afraid to vote for one way or the other on this. But you know what we are afraid of? Talking to each other. So, Madam Chair, do what you want. Have the roll call, and we can emphatically say what we want to say. But here's what I'll say to emphatically. If you really want to start breaking down walls, let's stop the ultimatums. Pull the roll call off, not because I'm afraid to vote for it, that is not it, but because let's show a sign of laying down arms and starting to extend olive branches. If we're not going to do that, let's just go sine-die and get out of here. Read Boyce's piece this morning. We are not tearing down any walls, members. In fact, we are building bigger and bigger obstacles to get one single thing done. And it's these little digs. Little digs
So, Madam Chair, do what you want. I would recommend we just take it to a voice vote or even lay it over so we can have further conversations, because it's conversations that get us to the next step, not going to the apocalyptic option. So,
Representative Katizabatun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman, I've got a couple commerce-related and business questions about this bill for you. So I'm going way back to my business degree from St. Thomas. Shout out to Minnesota private colleges and universities. I want to talk a little bit about articles of incorporation versus where a company is headquartered versus they're doing business in XYZ state. And I guess, you know, I've been trying to re-review the language, pay attention to testimony, listen to everybody weighing in on this bill. And I'm not finding the language where it says in this particular proposal. Like, so does this apply to only corporations that their articles of incorporation are here in the state of Minnesota, or anybody who is doing business in the state of Minnesota?
Thank Representative you. Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is actually a great question, and it is answered in 1.9, which it says the artificial persons means, and it cites a bunch of these chartering statutes, but it also says a foreign entity that is authorized to transact business, is transacting business or holds property in the state, is an artificial purpose for the purposes of this this law, and so it would include both corporations that are chartered here, as well as a foreign entity, in this case probably from another state, that's authorized to transact business or is transacting business.
Representative Katizabatun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that, Representative Greenman. That's really helpful. So, you know, sometimes when we are debating state law and different programs that we want to invest in for the people of Minnesota, paid family medical leave comes to mind. You know, we hear a lot about how, you know, if we raise fees, we raise taxes, we do this, businesses are going to leave the state. But we don't always see that happening as clear of a line drawn that, you know, some people would like to maybe see to prove a specific point. So even if a company would choose to take their headquarters and move elsewhere, because that's their prerogative, they would not be able to avoid this law if they are doing any business in the state of Minnesota. Is that correct?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you. That is correct. And I believe that, like, I mean, someone could help me out, but that, like, 85% of corporations are now currently chartered in Delaware, as it is. So when we talk about that, it would incorporate. If it didn't, it would be pretty small.
Representative Katizabatun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that, Representative Greenman. Yeah, one of the things that I'm just, you know, kind of thinking about and ruminating on as we have this discussion are, you know, when we talk about the state budget, we talk about family budgets, we talk about making public investments in making people's lives better, there's a lot of conversation about accountability. And I support that accountability. I think, you know, we should be able to show where our dollars go, and often that shows what we value. So I do find it concerning that corporations who are doing business here in Minnesota and elsewhere would not want those dollars that they're spending to be public, that show their values, right? So when we look at public donations and we see that, you know, Target Corporation donates a certain amount of money to a certain political candidate or a certain political candidate's inaugural celebration, we can see that, right? People, you know, consumers can see that and they can make a decision. Maybe they support what Target has done with that publicly disclosed money, maybe they don't. And maybe Target is only on the up and up, and they're not giving any money to PACs or some of the dark money or dollars that we can't see where they're going. But I think that that's a problem. I think it's problematic that is hidden from the consumer, from the citizens of the country, from the residents of Minnesota, so that we can't make an informed decision about where we spend our hard-earned money. And if we're spending it with corporations and businesses that share our values. There is a letter in our packet, members, from many small businesses here in Minnesota who are corporations, and they would be impacted by this legislation, and they're writing in support. So if you haven't taken a look at that, I think it's really worthwhile reading and just seeing what small business owners are supporting here in the state of Minnesota. There is a bill, members, right now in the jurisdiction of my committee, the Children and Families Committee, that would limit what families who receive supplemental nutrition assistance are able to spend those dollars on. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we are going to talk about regulating what families are able to spend that money on when it has, you know, an impact to the taxpayer dollar, even though those same people certainly pay taxes, more so than some corporations in many cases, then we should be able to say to corporations, your political spending, your usage of taxpayers' hard-earned money in their family budget that's going to you should be publicly accessible and viewable to the people of Minnesota. Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Representative Davids.
Thank you very much. I listened with great curiosity to the Smith rant, making very serious allegations, and I would like to have it on the table right now on what politicians are being bought off. That was said about five or six times, politicians being bought off. That's impugning motives. And if they are being bought off, I'm a co-chair of the Ethics Committee. Please bring them before the Ethics Committee. I'll bet you don't bring one. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I think, I'll just keep the comments about planes from foreign countries to myself, I guess. Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. Thank you, committee. This has been a very illuminating, fascinating, just like interesting. I always love that when we get a little philosophical. That's my comfort zone. But I do want to come back all the way to the beginning of the conversation. Representative Reimer made a comment that's, you know, we've heard a few different layers of why this bill may or may not be good. But it was Representative Reimer who said that 8 out of 10 of the highest DFL, highest donating groups in the state of Minnesota actually benefit the DFL. And this echoes a comment I heard in another committee last week, or this week, I don't know what time is, in which we were accused essentially of doing a thing that, hey, this is against your interests. And I think that's super important, because when you lead with your values, you end up in a position of doing what's right, not doing what's right for your party. And now there's something going on the other side, but the thing that happens when you do the right thing is you don't worry about your own financial interests. You worry about the people you are elected to serve. Now, this could very well come down in a major decrease in large-scale donations to the Democratic Party, and our side would all vote for it because it's right, and it's what people we represent want us to do. Corporate wealth concentration is the worst it has ever been. The levels are worse they have ever been in the history of humanity. Wealth inequality is the worst it has ever been in the history of humanity. This conversation pits 150 years of legal precedent against basic democratic common sense, just basic common sense. Right now, there are two AI companies. One's worth $734 billion, and the other is worth $500 billion, and they both started super PACs, and they're fighting each other through the super PAC process to influence the elections so that their AI company can get the contracts with the federal government. And that is how we decide elections. I mean, that is bananas. Nobody, at least in Minnesota, is saying that's how we should use our money in elections. Representative Heintzman, the bill does not restrict speech. It holds you accountable for your speech. Dark money is dark not because it is bad. It is because we do not know who is spending it, where, or why. And just frankly, bringing a piece of legislation that has 80% support from the people of Minnesota is our job. It is not a gotcha. It is not somehow meant to embarrass someone. We are simply doing the job the people have sent us here to do. So if you want to continue to have unaccountable money spent in our elections, then just own the position. Don't attack us, don't impugn us. We got a lecture about our attacks, and then we immediately got attacked by the next person on the other side. Like, we all know what we're doing here. We're arguing for the values we believe in. The values of this proposal are right. This is what, 16 years ago, we used to not do it this way. We can't imagine getting back to a history of what we did 16 years ago that was working fine. Come on. Support the bill. Take this ridiculous idea that this is how Americans want our elections to be waged and leave it in the dust.
Thank you, Representative Buck.
Padami Aye, Chair, and Padami Aye to you, Representative, for bringing this forward. I've been sitting here trying to understand this question, and Representative Finke touched on it a little. And maybe you can help me, since you seem to be very smart in law. How would this bill limit speech? I'm really having a hard time with that, because they still have the ability to donate. They still have the ability to do those things, but it would be out in the open, per se. To me, limiting speech is trying to take away individual rights to peacefully protest the injustices that they see happening to their neighbors. To me, that's limiting speech. Something like this isn't. So what am I missing?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that question, because we've been using a lot of these. And the difference between the example you gave and I think what I heard Representative Reimers or what Representative Heinzman say is you're talking about natural people. And Representative Heinzman is talking about the rights of corporations. And what we know, we don't have to, since the founding of our Constitution, we don't have to charter any corporations. They're creatures of the state. And so we decide what powers corporations have. And if we decide that they don't have spending powers in our elections, that's our job. But I do think it impacts speech, because I think that what is happening right now is the flood of spending from artificial persons or corporations and non-humans is drowning out the speech and the voting rights and the protest rights and the political spending of our neighbors. And so I do actually think that this is a pro-free speech bill. If the rights you're worried about are citizens and humans.
Thank you. Representative Buck, can you follow up? Thank you. Representative Hansen.
No, thank you, Chair. I'll pass.
Oh, okay. Did we want to continue? Or do you?
Sure.
Okay. Representative or Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I've heard more about today in this bill than I've heard any other things, elections, 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 elections. And this bill is being referred from this committee to the General Register. And it appears to me that we're skipping in a very important committee, which would be elections. And I would, but I'm not going to make a motion if I thought that this bill was actually going to come out of committee today to re-refer this to the Elections Committee, where this conversation really belongs. And Representative Greenman, you are exactly right. You have been working on this since you've been here, and you've hit brick walls in other committees, and so you're trying a very creative way to get at something that you have a concern about. And you're an elected official. I laud you for that. But I wholly and solely and fully disagree with your approach to this and with the methodology and how you're approaching this. The part that I would like to ask you, because this isn't going to elections, and again, if for some reason this does become law, I want to have legislative intent, because it will certainly be litigated. And again, that's a right of Americans. I heard you mention earlier the idea that, well, a group took in the cost of state of Minnesota money on this. They challenged it. Well, that is the right of an American to be able to do that. So one of the questions that came to mind, and again, it's rhetorical in nature given the time that we have, but I think you need to ponder this. Representative Greenman brought up, 80-some percent of and 70-some percent of and Republicans and independents. I would really like to see the question that was asked of these people, because what I'm being told in my district is I am sick and tired of the money in politics. They don't say deep, dark money that comes from corporations. They don't know that. They just think it's one candidate banging the head of another candidate when they look at it. They don't look at the disclosures. They don't know what's going on. The part that I'm also asking, what I want legislative intent, and maybe I can just get a couple questions with Representative Greenman on this, is would be number one, if I am a small business in a community and I'm a corporation, can I put a sign in my window that says vote yes or no on a referendum?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the question. I will just say that it wasn't an American citizen who brought that litigation. It was a corporation. And again, in a world where we're talking about natural people, it matters. And it matters where the money's coming in order to litigate. But so is your question, can you put up a sign?
Madam Chair, very quickly.
I would need to know more about the the question, but if you look at the definition of what political spending is, which is what would determine this, it says to directly or indirectly pay, contribute, expend, transfer, or disperse money or anything of value to support or oppose a candidate or a political committee.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you. And the reason I'm concerned about this is I think what will happen if this particular piece of legislation becomes law, there'll be an attempt to go back and to define further what political speech is, to take away the rights of an individual or a business owner to be able to support or not support something that affects that business as well in a community. And I'm concerned about the fact that there has been some in the news, since we came back to the legislature, there was questions about involvement in the community with federal agents being here and signs having gone up, ICE not welcome here, protect Fourth Amendment rights, that were up in businesses. I'm wondering, yes or no, would your involvement, if someone wanted to as a business, contribute to that type of a cause? Would they be prohibited from doing that on a go-forward basis?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, and your follow-up was actually illuminating. This would not affect any, if you're talking about a business owner, that is a natural person, that is a person who has constitutional rights and can put up any sign they want. What we're talking about is the corporate entity or the nonprofit entity. And I think the signs you're referring to don't support or oppose a candidate or a ballot initiative or political committee, so I don't see how that would be impacted by this bill.
Chair Madam Driscoll. Chair, that's my point exactly. Thank you for making a representative agreement that we will be then back saying what is and what isn't political speech. This is the camel's nose under the tent to be able to regulate more speech and more activities. And this is why it needs to go to elections and not sitting in the Commerce Committee here in the state of Minnesota. Members, I encourage a no vote today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that really interests me. I was in a very competitive district before I got redistricted, and I just want to kind of share one story. I was very, very pregnant while I was campaigning on my reelection campaign, and I was at one of the campaign offices late at night, and nobody else was around, and I was carrying some literature out to my car, and somebody from a organization funded by businesses followed me to my car with a camera in a dark parking lot, took pictures of me, and then about a week later, all of them were posted, there was like the worst picture of me ever in my mailbox. And, fine, that's cool, but following me to my car, and it felt very intimidating and invasive. And this is the kind of practices that we're seeing in elections now. You get stacks of flyers that nobody looks at. They just go right into the garbage can. And I think what Minnesotans want is transparency. That's all we're asking for, is transparency. And that's the thing that is very frustrating right now, is everything is so shrouded. And we know that to have a fair market, a fair
To have freedom, we need transparency in what's happening. And so, Representative Greenman, I thank you for this bill, and I will leave it to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair, I'll just call, if you would vote with me to send it on to elections, I'm happy to go there. It doesn't need to, but it's always an interesting conversation. I just want to close because I think it was sort of asked what the questions are.
Madam Chair, you don't usually do this, but if Representative Greenman is willing to support a motion to re-refer this to elections, I will certainly support that from this committee.
Representative Greenman?
I would need to actually talk to the chairs of the elections, which so I don't want to get stuck there.
I'm sure he or she and both would be perfectly fine with it.
I would prefer that this is all in the jurisdiction of Commerce. And so I don't see any reason why we wouldn't move it to the General Register. But
thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
So let me take us back to, I think, where you started, Representative O'Driscoll, which is the concern people have. Because I think that the most important thing we're thinking about when we talk about elections is what people think, who people think we're like what people think we're listening to and are deciding what's happening here. Decisions, again, I cited this, but 68% of people say that wealthy donors have more influence than a decade ago, and 76% thinks that large donors make it harder for ordinary Americans to have their voices heard. So here's why it affects us, because we've been here 3 weeks, and every committee I'm in, including when I was in this committee earlier, we have seen Minnesotans show up, testifier after testifier after testifier, with issues that have 75, 80%. Let's take the surveillance pricing. And people are, the question is, should we let people get spied on? And then corporations use that to drive up prices and drive down wages. And on the other side are the tech companies that are actually doing that and making money from it. And we can't get these bills through. We can't get affordability bills through because the businesses show up and we don't have the votes. In public safety, we have a gun violence prevention, we have a gun violence epidemic. We had a shooting in my district. We have two kids died. 70% of Minnesotans want us to ban these weapons of war, these assault weapons. And what happens? We go to committee and family after family, healthcare provider, teachers, nurses testify, and on the other side of the aisle, or on the other side of the testifier table, is literally the lobby and the industry that is making money flooding our communities with guns. And what happens? We deadlock. And so when I think about what we're doing here, it is not about us. It is about those 70%, 80%, 60% of Minnesotans who are asking us to solve problems, and because of this flood of corporate money, because of their influence, we're not doing it. In this committee, you all have the ability, states have the power to solve this problem here and now. And we always have. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'd ask you for your yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. So I will move that House File 3419.
Madam Chair, before you call the vote.
I'm sorry, what was that? Chair O'Driscoll?
Given the interest in time, we will let's move to the vote so we can turn the room over.
Okay, thank you. The clerk will take the roll.
Co-Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Co-Chair O'Driscoll?
No.
O'Driscoll, nay. Co-Vice Chair Elkins?
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Co-Vice Chair Perryman?
No.
Perryman, nay. Representative Allen?
No.
Allen, nay. Representative Buck?
Yes.
Buck, aye. Representative Cha?
Aye.
Cha, aye. Representative Davids?
No.
Davids, nay. Representative Dotseth?
Nay.
Dotseth, nay. Representative Falconer?
Aye.
Falconer, aye. Representative Finke?
Aye.
Finke, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Heintzman?
Nay.
Heintzman, nay. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Hewitt, aye. Representative Katiza Watoon?
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Representative Kresha?
No.
Kresha, nay. Representative Reimer?
No.
Reimer, nay. Representative Smith?
Aye.
Smith, aye. Representative Van Binsbergen?
No.
Van Binsbergen, nay. Representative West?
No.
West, nay. Madam Chair, there are 10 ayes, 10 nays.
The motion does not prevail.
And that is the agenda for today. In the interest of time, Representative Driscoll, did you want to preview next week?
Folks will have to tune in next week. We are running over time.
Sounds good. Committee is adjourned.